guitar and kazoo.
Thank you.
pretty touching stuff. It really gets the Christmas spirit flowing. That's Dean Hoffert on a cassette recorded direct to mono cassette. You've been listening to Radio Music Gallery, Christmas edition. I'm Alan Davis, and I and Paul Hodge both wish you a jolly holiday. We will be back again next week, same time. Good night.
When a person is associated with a work of art, the art takes on a special aura, and vice versa.
Did you mark check?
The problem with language.
Diese Rufnummer ist um.
Dan, what is this for? What is this recording for?
You know, when I first heard about it, I could hardly believe it. It seemed almost too good to be true.
Well, I can't really believe it yet either.
Look at me. I've never won anything in my life at all.
The problem with language.
Lesson 7.
The second Sunday of every month, 11 to 2 a.m. on CKLN 88.1.
They can't be seen in the early. They can't be done on the radio.
What did you, is that high-speed dubbing?
Yep.
That's great, huh? The quality?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
CD. It's a CD. It's a
compact disc.
Theme song on CD.
Welcome to CKLN FM 88.1 in Toronto. And my name is Mike Dyer with J.R. Bob Dobbs. And yet, this actually isn't a regular installment of A Church of the Subgenius. This is a special treat because it is the holiday time. And I invited you back for this week.
For today's.
Yeah, normally we do every other week, but this is an exception. So. Yeah.
This is Nimrod's birthday.
Nimrod's birthday.
The first pagan. And, of course, the Constantine and the pagan Roman Empire converted Christianity into a pagan religion with a Christian framework. And today is, no, the 25th is Nimrod's birthday. When they pretend it's Jesus' birthday.
When we first started talking, and you identified yourself to me as J.R. Bob Dobbs, you know, as a young cub journalist, one of my first questions to you was the significance of Bob and the Church of the Subgenius in a religious context, and you've answered the question in the past. So, again, this time of year, I think it's important that we raise the topic. People hear the word church, they assume that the church has, a religious meaning, significance to it. And once again, I ask you, does the Church of the Subgenius have anything to offer for those seeking a God figure?
Yeah, if you think of God figure as an environment to live in, not a particular human being, not a animal or symbol, but an environment, particularly the electric environment, is the religious temple, the temple bureaucracy I'm offering. So it's a new religion. It's a religion that honors all those subgeniuses who, through history, built the technology that led from one artifact to another, each creating an environment, right? And eventually creating the industrial environment and then the electric environment. So I'm including the history of man, emphasizing the subgenius role. And, Nimrod on drums. So yes, it is a church, but it's an environment of Bob, by Bob, for Bob, and excluding Bob. Mm-hmm. It includes everybody who can listen in with attention while asleep.
How do Connie and Bob celebrate Christmas? Many people have asked me that question.
Well, we don't, but we don't celebrate Christmas. We don't celebrate Nimrod's birthday. But we do let people who come to our palace come in. Whoever knows where we live and comes around on Christmas Day, they get to join in on our regular meal, you know, yogurt and cheese and some juice, you know. And so we share with people on that day, but we don't invite them. They have to find us. That's all. Bob and Connie do the same thing they ever did.
What is ironic, of course, is that you touched upon your diet, and I've experienced the Bob diet. I've been over to your
palace
a couple of times and enjoyed a lovely, modest feast of food. You remain very, very gaunt and very healthy. For those people who haven't met Bob personally, you do bear a striking resemblance to Jesus in some ways. I think the shape, the chiseled good looks.
Yeah.
If you had a beard, a very long beard, I can imagine you perhaps symbolizing Jesus. So there is some irony there, I think you perhaps agree.
Yeah, I'm a very good-looking and healthy good-looking, and not an advertisement kind of playboy man good-looking, but just raw health and strength and spirituality and a slight touch of pagan, you know, I'm available. Here's my phone number,
pagan
kind of look.
Mystique.
Yeah, pagan sensuality. I kind of could look like Tom Waits, but Waits is not, he doesn't have that strong, healthy look that I have. You think of a healthy Jesus and Tom Waits together, you got me. And whenever I wear contact lenses, oh my God, it's awesome. You know, if I'm wearing contact lenses, it just enhances things. But why did you bring that up? Oh yeah, and so yeah, if you go and eat at my place, the health doesn't come, apparently, from what I eat. It comes from something else, right? And that's lack, as we know. But, you know, you have something to say? Because I can switch it into another topic. And Mike, you're gone. Oh, Mike's being clever.
What I was going to say.
What did you say? Did you say something?
We were just mouthing the words here.
Oh, it was nice.
I think that the microphone in there has gone dead.
Well, you brought a band down tonight. We got this party atmosphere. Remember, call in tonight because it's party time. We're going to probably act like people do when they have a party. Not like Pink's, but people. And that's subgenius.
What I was going to say was this week, many people will stop me on the street and they'll say, Mike, who is Bob and where can I get a hold of him? Other than on CKLM, of course, every week. And I have to answer a lot of questions, but this week I had a criticism about the show, and I...
Okay, before you go into that, do you give them my phone number?
No,
you can give them. If they want to get in touch with Bob, they call 657-8040.
Yeah.
You know, and Bob will respond.
I wasn't sure if I had the capacity to do that, so
you can do it.
Yeah.
If they want to get... Now, what's the criticism?
The criticism was that when we began this show, you were talking a lot about the church and about your role as Bob within the church, and now you've just become a little more self-centered, and it's now all Bob.
The egotistical Bob.
No, not in an egotistical way necessarily, but I think you know, I brought up the point of alienating our audience a few weeks ago, and I think this person had some sympathy for
that. Is this person a subgenius? Should we acknowledge this criticism?
I don't know that I can pass that judgment. While I have slack, I don't have enough slack to deduce whether or not someone is a subgenius.
Is this someone with some kind of control, power that I have to acknowledge? Does it matter what this person says?
No.
All right, because then I'll answer. Yeah. I'll deal with it, because, you see, I had to... Hold just a minute.
Yeah. Hi, Lee. We're having a party. Come on in.
No. Well, you won't. She wasn't the one that criticized, was she?
No, okay. Leo was just...
Did you...
What is it? The question... Okay, look. When I came on, I don't know if this person knows the continuity. Obviously, I had to change when I won the election to become chairman of the Secret Council of 10 on the first week in March 1988. When I won that election, I was moved into chairmanship position. Up to that point, I had to put on a public role of kind of subservience to events as the Pink Prison ruled. But to start off the show back in June 87, we had to play the Reverend Stang tapes as an ostensible reason that was what we're doing, promoting the Pink version of the Churches of Jesus. And I, from the beginning, was very open about how I was not a member of Stang's church, how his church had ripped off my archives. Maybe this person doesn't understand this. So being that we were in our Pink Prison situation, we played the Stang stuff. But then, as a result of my short commentaries at that point, remember, we started getting responses from some genius who asked me to take more time to comment and play less of Stang's tapes. Do you remember that? And we responded. And it was only logical that by the time that I was Secret Council 10, we could announce that the Stang tapes were superfluous. They weren't really what the church was about. I mean, if this person is saying that I was a member of the church, they missed the whole point. I don't think they heard the original statements by me, my original manifesto. I am not a member of the Church of Subgenius. I am what the Church of the Subgenius Stang version. What'd you do that for? did I go off?
Let's maintain focus here.
Yeah,
party atmosphere.
It's all right, Ken. No problem, Ken.
The band's getting restless.
So the thing is, since the book is a pale imitation of what I'm about, I don't have to acknowledge that church at all, because that obviously something that would get marketed on that such a big scale.
I think we can acknowledge that, but I think also the listener. You had begun reading or opening up part of your files.
Yeah.
And in some ways it came to an abrupt end.
Reading from the files?
You haven't done that for a long time. Right?
Well, we had a lot of different... you got moved.
Yeah.
And then we came to a situation where, what have we been doing the last 6 months? Maybe it's appropriate to account for what we've been doing. We have been taking phone calls. Mm-hmm. I've been talking about some things. But are you you would like more files?
Well, I... Yeah, what does it matter what I want anyway? But I think that the files were an interesting aspect of your work. And
I can do that any time, bring down some files. But usually, I just sort of sensed, I was away for a while, Mike. You know, think of the interruptions that have been happening.
Yeah. No, don't take this too personal. I think we're making a big thing out of this, and perhaps we should just drop it.
Yeah, I bet you that person's not even listening to my explanation. Yeah,
probably sleeping.
Yeah, so, but it sounds like that person is really involved in the Stang Church and believes in that. You know, but we got somebody on the line?
No.
Okay, now listen. Here, I got something. We want to drop that topic. I don't think... I think it's obvious that what I'm doing now and how I do it usually has perfect pitch. So, now, Mike, if you're taking a call, I want to address you in particular. There's one thing I want to address you in particular. There is a continuity in what I do, and at the end of our show last week, you asked me about my parents. And I want to explain that was a good clairvoyant question. I couldn't talk about it last week, but I'm going to talk about my parents tonight. All right? There's a reason. There's a new book out called The Holy Grail Across the Atlantic. And if one takes a look at that book, they can see proof that I'm Bob. Because the premise of the book is that a man named Henry St. Clair brought the Grail. Do you know it, Kent? Brought the Grail over to Nova Scotia, all right, in the 1300s, 1400s, in that area. Henry St. Clair, and therefore, yeah, and the Indians of Nova Scotia, the Mi'kmaq Indians, were inspired by this, and they have the legend of Glooskap. There's a whole mythology about the effect of the Holy Grail coming to Nova Scotia. Now, I've admitted that I came from Nova Scotia in this reincarnation, all right? Now, that's important. Now, I have a big operation on St. Clair Avenue here in Toronto, the Doctors for Bob Clinic. The Doctors for Bob Clinic happens here on St. Clair Avenue. All right? There's the Henry St. Clair link. Now, Reverend Ivan Stang's real name is Douglas St. Clair Smith. Now, I would give Doug this much. He is a kind of a John the Baptist for my work. I mean, he got waylaid and distracted, but he did promote me and set it up for me being on the air now. So you've got his middle name is St. Clair. He didn't even know the significance of St. Clair until I pointed him out to him a few months ago. Then you have St. Clair coming over to Nova Scotia. I'm from Nova Scotia. The main clinic and operation I'm associated with here in Toronto is on St. Clair Avenue. So when they say the Holy Grail went across the Atlantic 600 years ago, then they're on the trail of Bob. You know, they're centuries behind, but they're on the trail. They psychically are picking it up on a collective level. And they'll write books about Bob in 500 years, about being Nova Scotia. But you can see the historians are picking up the whip, right? And they know something happened in Nova Scotia. They don't know that they're picking up the present. They interpret it as something in the back, you know, in the past. So that's something about my parents, Mike, that I thought would be relevant to bring up today, is the St. Clair connection to Bob and his work in Nova Scotia. Their books come out capitalizing on my past.
When your parents gave birth to you, did they know that you were going to be something more than just another child, that you were going to be a very special, gifted?
It's hard to... I gave them the freedom of having a private citadel of consciousness, so I didn't do some ESP on them. But they unconsciously, let's assume they didn't know, they unconsciously gave me incredible slack from day one. So I had a very utopian childhood and had all the acclamations in the pink stream as well as subgenius stream. I had all kinds of social relationships in both camps. And all of them were enhanced and respected by their respective pinks and subgeniuses. No problem with seeing a contradiction in my activity. So I would say that they acted out in a meditative form, an environment, a proper environment. So their unconscious at least knew I was Bob and gave me the appropriate environment. But they, as to know whether they knew, I left that up for them. Their own sense of privacy. I mean, their own individuality required, maybe, I thought, that they keep it to themselves. I mean, if you know too much, you kill, right? To define is to kill, to suggest is to create. Mallarmé. Turn of the century. Mallarmé, you remember him? Stefan Mallarmé, symbolist. That's what he said. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
I have another talk. We should point out today, December 21st, is Frank Zappa's birthday. And that leads into my sober topic. Last year, I read off the body count for 1987.
I remember that.
Remember that? Yes. And it was basically showing the pinks murdering each other. I listed off a lot of European bodies showing up in the fall of 87 as a result of leading up to the Secret Council of 10 election. I talked about the body count external to my operation, suffering the effects of it, but external. And I did it around Nimrod's birthday just to sober people up, sober the pink ups who were getting a little too festive, right? So this year, I thought I'd given another body count as we approach the festive season. But it'll be a body count with more sobering aspects. It's a body count on the Holy Offices of Bob. The Holy Offices of Bob. Let's do a rundown on what's happening to them. So, we start off with the Holy Office of Rhetoric, Marsh McLuhan. They killed him in 1980, all right? He's dead. The next Holy Office of Grammar, Herbert W. Armstrong, founder of the Worldwide Church of God, dead January 86. Second Holy Office gone. The third Holy Office, Office of Logic, Lyndon LaRouche, well, going to jail.
Just recently going.
Going to jail. That's right, 65 years, and January 27th he'll be sentenced, 65 years, and a $3 million fine. Potential, that's what he's looking at. So there's three holy offices in the trivium. Now there's four holy offices in the quadrivium, traditional classical means of organizing subjects in medieval education. So the fourth holy office is Mae Brussel. Dead. They killed her. They imprisoned LaRouche. They killed Herbert Armstrong. They killed Mae Brussel on October 3rd, 1988. All right, four down, six to go. Mae Brussel was the holy office of arithmetic. All right. Next holy office, Dr. Beter. All right. Holy office of astronomy. Dead March 14th, 1987. All right. Let's look at this. What a body count. The seventh holy office to wrap up the quadrivium. Yeah. We did May, Beter. No, the sixth holy office. May was fourth. Beter was fifth. The sixth is James Joyce. Dead, 1941. Long time dead. And we have had no coverage on Finnegan's Wake, no specials. What's his name? Joseph Campbell, William Irwin Thompson. They don't do any specials on the Finnegan's Wake on PBS or anything, right? Or Robert Fulford or Patrick Watson or is there anybody else? Barbara Frum? No interview with Joyce's?
No
Babs Frum interview with Joyce's estate or family. Joyce, gone. He's the Holy Office of Geometry. Look on page 293 of Finnegan's Wake. You'll see the geometric pattern he's presenting. That was Holy Office 6 right now. Holy Office 7, Office of Music, Frank Zappa. Frank's still alive, but you know what happened to him? They broke up his band this summer. They came in and started a war between his bass player and his drummer, apparently, you know, and stopped the incredible band that Frank was touring with earlier in the East Coast and in Europe. The best band, he told me personally, the best band he ever had. They stopped his tour. All his fans on the West Coast never got to see Frank. All right? So the Holy Office of Music snuffed out. The Eighth Holy Office has no name. It's just the thunder. We have 10 holy offices because there's 10 thunders, and that mirrors the 10 thunders in Finnegan's Wake. So we've done the trivium and the quadrivium. All right? So the Eighth Holy Office is Dave Worster, Cosmic Awareness. He is living by the skin of his teeth, you know, the seat of his pants. I don't know if he'll make it through tomorrow.
What makes you say this is another killer? What makes you say that? Because you met Dave in California.
Well, they just don't allow him to have much money. He's worth about $40 million, and they just won't let him have an inch of it. A tiny drop. So
you say he's on the edge, then? He's on the edge of bankruptcy.
No, he's bankrupt. It's just I don't know how he lives on very little substance. Material, shelter, food.
It's starting to wear him out.
Well, he survived for since 1975 on this low level of a substance of 13 years. But that's why it was good that I got him on tape, on video, just in case he drops off. But he's very strong. But he's in a weak, very weak position, all right? Though I wouldn't count him out. So we've got six dead. Frank immobilized as being in the media. He's not... doesn't have access to the musical media, so that's a threat to his coverage. And other than Bob Marshall's interview, Dave Worster is struggling. The Ninth Holy Office is Garrett Dean in Nova Scotia. He's under house arrest. All right? He's under house arrest. And the Tenth Holy Office is Club 22, which is me and our work here in CKLM. So we're talking, the body count is that most everybody is gone except me. So we're going around the final turn, and it looks like we've gone off the tracks. And even though I'm in control of Secret Council 10, we all got to go through pain and those bardos of the devil gods, right? And so you're going to see Bob have tough times, you know, tough, strangling, claustrophobic situation. And in that condition, we know Bob will make it through. But he's just acting out in a meditative form, verbally and gesturally, what we're all going to have to go through. So if we remain confident that slack is ours, then Nimrod's birthday would not have the effect it's intended to have on us. So that's the body count, Mike. Any comments?
Do you want to go to the audience and take some questions?
Any questions? Have we had any phone calls?
Yeah, we've had phone calls. I've been ignoring them, though.
Oh, yeah.
I had a question, which is, I'm not sure that it truly applies to what you're talking about this evening, but it's in regards to a friend of yours who did an interview with Frank Zappa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bob Marshall.
Mm-hmm. And the difficulties that he was having convincing Frank of some of the merits of Lyndon LaRouche's campaign and what he's been doing. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, is that all the holy offices are incompatible. I mean, Bob Marshall did a good job showing, as a subsidiary of Bob Dobbs' work, that Zappa will have no truck with LaRouche, and LaRouche will have no truck with Zappa. But that's the power of Bob. I'm the only one, power of Bob Dobbs, who can integrate and use all these holy offices. You know what I mean? Whereas they themselves do excellent work in each division they operate in, that they cannot see and bridge the gap. They don't have that comprehensive look. They don't have that view of seeing how it all interrelates. So they are divisive among themselves. And I didn't mind Bob pointing that out. That showed and illustrated, I mean, Bob Marshall pointing it out. Mm-hmm. That illustrated what unique role I have as the integrator of all these geniuses and subgeniuses and things.
The only other comment I had for you, Bob, was that I think it's a good idea that at this time, being as it is a time of review and looking forwards and backwards, you should think about what you're doing here at the station and just how much you think the listeners can take in and whether they do listen on a regular basis, because it's my feeling, having talked to a number of people who listen on a regular basis but can't listen every week, that you have changed a great deal in the way you present information. It was a much more open-handed type of presentation, and now it really that much meat to what you're saying. It's very self-centered, and I think that is something to query for yourself, maybe not even on air.
It seems that we've already discussed
that's
that
what you've been saying is important,
right? Well, Mike, did you hear us earlier discuss mm-hmm. that this has been the criticism?
Mm-hmm.
But we do have some guests here.
The
party's showing up.
The party is here.
So it's something to ponder.
Yeah, well, the thing is that it's not me. It may, see, if they think Bob is me, then they're missing the point. I'm talking about Bob, the electric environment. And if it's seen as a figure of me, then that's okay, but it's not what I'm talking about. If people request more files, okay. But I think as we go around the final turn and as we move into that zone of the Antichrist, where the Antichrist will be the only one running the planet, then, and the Antichrist will be using the pink prison of the electric environment for a disservice level, then it may be necessary to focus on me as the opposite of the Antichrist. So we have to go through the eye of the needle where we focus on me as a anti-environment to the Antichrist or the anti-Bob. But I rest assured, certainly I'm not in it for continuing that. That's just me responding to the problems in the Secret Council of Ten. So rest assured, there's a lot more good stuff to come. You know, and you're welcome to even respond to me now and say something, you know.
No.
It's okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you have nothing more to say? Well, thanks a lot, Dave.
That's good. We have a listening audience that's able to interact and to follow through on some of the comments I made earlier. It's also good because, you know, Bob, you're a very important fixture at the radio station, but you are invaluable, and it's good. You can take criticism. You take criticism very well.
Yeah. Well, it's criticism is part of the dialogue process.
Yeah.
You know, we need that.
Yeah.
And it's just, I know I'm in good hands, you know, and nobody is going to be able to alter the plan that's being acted out here,
mm-hmm.
right, regardless of personal opinions.
Yeah. Well, at this stage,
we do have some party members. Let's welcome them in.
Some guests would like to join our Christmas celebration.
Steve and Bob, who kind of looks like Bob. Come on in here, Steve.
And maybe they want to listen to it. But Kent has a question. Go ahead, Kent.
Okay, let's go to another member of our audience with the white sweatshirt on.
The usual white sweatshirt. Yes. I want to know where Sherman Skolnick fits in on all of this.
Good point. We've expressed before that Sherman Skolnick is a subsidiary of the Holy Office of Arithmetic, May Brussels' office. May and Skolnick are interchangeable, but since the Ten Holy Offices were dominated by men, I thought we'd have at least one woman there, right? May Brussels. But Skolnick will be carrying on May Brussels' work in that position. They are equal in their abilities and commendable, and Skolnick is that kind of person who will step aside and let May get the publicity as the representative of the Holy Office of Arithmetic. But certainly Sherman Skolnick is a very important person.
Okay.
Okay, I think now Bob and Steve, come on in. Where's Steve? Steve's usually shy.
He's going to the washroom.
Okay, come on in. Present yourselves, buddies. Come on, this is Nimrod's birthday. We're trying to encourage party involvement. Come on, man. Let's say something. You don't even have to address it to me. We won't be self-centered tonight. Address your question to anybody, anything that's listening, or even to Mike. Go ahead.
How's the Christmas stuff
been going?
Hi, Mike.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you.
Steve will be with us momentarily.
All right.
He's just gone to relieve himself.
Okay, right. Good. Steve, he's less vocal than you. So
yes, at least I need a cigarette.
But you're asking people out there how Christmas shopping is going.
Here, but you're here too.
Oh, no.
Speaking of what Steve is doing, I'm going to...
Take a seat, man. Put the headphones on. This guy, his name's Bob, too, and he when he comes around, he's so wide-eyed, I just get kind of flattered by it. Mike's trying to get the on-air booth going, the telephone. You can't get them on, Mike? Okay, it's not working. Relay his question, Mike. So, yeah, what do you... Come on, tell us something. Hey, are you afraid to share?
I'm a little in awe here
at the... At seeing us, Bob, in operation? Well, you feel that... You know, I guess, that you're being discarnate now. Your image and voice is being projected over the whole, who knows, Toronto area, right? So you're in many places at once right now and partaking in much of discarnate response, disembodied intelligence of listening to you, responding to you. That's Bob. That's the electric environment that we all share. That's software communism.
I was just listening to you on the radio in a car.
Coming down,
being
eh?
Driven all over the city.
We were here before we were here.
Yeah, that's right. Here. See, that's the point. You were with the church, though your bodies are here now, and I think you're going through that psychic transition of trying to relate being discarnate, but you're in your body.
That's
you're
true.
Seeing Bob in body form. It's confusing. Yeah. So you sound like you've got a good voice. Come on in.
My name's Mark.
Mark. Have we met?
No.
Oh, okay.
Let's just start the whole thing rolling.
Yeah, come on in and say something. Or, you know, just encourage. See, the audience would be in a state of shock if we had too much silence, because this kind of state is that devastating to the psychic ability, right? So if we have to cover up with an anti-environment of verbal activity or music as a way of bouncing off the discounted effect. So when I fade out, come in and say something.
Come in and carry on where you left off.
It was pointed out,
the airway's busy,
Bob, that we had a caller. The machine's not working very well tonight, but that in fact the caller felt we should get away from this Christianity thing, because it isn't Nimrod's birthday yet, and that tonight is also the 21st, sort of a pagan ritual event tonight, and it is also a full moon. So we just wanted to bounce that off you.
What do they suggest we do?
Not a thing, actually. But
just don't talk about Nimrod or
Nimrod
Christ or anybody. No. Yeah, I'm for that.
The man on the stage.
Okay, well, we have some people here who can bring up any topics they want.
Shall we talk about the full moon? That might be an interesting...
Yeah, is today an actual pagan holiday right today on Zappa's birthday?
It's a solstice, isn't
it? Oh, that one, yeah, okay, yeah. It's always that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so Zappa, who says he's a devout pagan... was born on the right day. It's the shortest day of the year.
Yeah.
Which means we have to make an extra long show to balance that off.
That's right, yeah. It's
well, true. Perhaps we should talk more slowly or more quickly to
contain
ourselves within the same cycle of time.
So the two people who have joined us on our Christmas special tonight, Mark.
No,
and
not the pagan special.
Yeah, no, they're university students, so maybe they would have a sharp question for us.
Well, I think, like, you got access to
university student.
Yeah, you've got access to a lot of listeners right now. What would you like to say to them? You don't have to address me.
Oh, yes, that's a possibility.
Yeah, now what would you...
It's still hard to comprehend that there are other people involved in this dialogue.
Yeah, you can't see them.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't hear them, but rest assured, they are there. Our ratings are very high right now.
Oh, that's...
So what would you... Now, I bet you as many times you've been walking down the street on a bus, flying to London, you know, and the plane didn't blow up, and you're relieved, and you said, gee, I'd really like to express something about this, or... Well, you know, what the effects of your life. Here's an opportunity to give your unique essence over the air.
And Christmas is off limits.
Yeah.
I could talk about a ride today. I went with a friend. We went to look for Christmas trees to cut down. Now, is this straying on the topic
again.
Too much?
Yes. Well, is this really what you want to talk about? I mean,
yes,
you know.
Yes, because we drove all the way out there through all this traffic, and we couldn't get one because it was getting so dark and so late. But it was. We got one on the way back from an Esso station, which was just as exciting as actually going out and cutting a tree down ourselves. I thought that was...
So you're an existentialist. And in other words, you have this opportunity to talk to a lot of people about long-range or short-range topics, and you pick what happened to you today.
Immediately, absolutely.
As an epiphany, an extreme significant moment, an experience. You definitely a subgenius here. You know? He picks today's activity as what you would do if you were Arafat. You would talk about what happened to you today if you had the UN.
I think so, yeah. Whether I'd shave today or not. I think that would be one of my important topics, I suppose.
Where's that cow?
Well, you are. You are an existentialist. And now, Bob, you got some background there, but that's okay.
I think Arafat's an existentialist.
No, I don't think he's... No, he's a politician. He's a Palestinian man. He's got long-range plans to build a state. You know, he has to worry about that bureaucratic structure, rather than how he, what he bought today, or, you know, what he's consuming today, or what he's producing privately, you know, how many children he has or something.
How many people out there would be interested if we could get Arafat on this radio program?
Well, we've had him on, actually.
We've had him on.
You have had him on.
Yeah, I channeled him several times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can channel any historical figure, present, past, or future.
You can tell Mark's not a regular listener.
Yeah. Is this the first time you've ever heard of this stuff?
No, I've heard of some of it.
Oh, okay, that's right. But, Bob, it's your turn to present what you would like to say. You know, it doesn't have to be to everybody. It can be to who you think is an important listener. What would you like to say? Or in verbal terms. I mean, you could use silence, but you're good at that already, using silence. Let's try a little test and challenge and try verbality. What would you really... Now, maybe you could talk about the fact you can't think of it right now. That's significant because the point is that you are discarnate right now and in the physical. It's a confusing schizophrenic experience. And what's the reason to conceptualize? There's no point in verbalizing what you're feeling right now. Now, you see, that's why it appears that I'm self-centered, because I have the ability to operate in both states, discarnate and physical and verbal and discarnate and all that stuff. But I can talk in that situation. So it looks like it's concentrating on me. But I'm only providing an anti-environment to the discarnate state. So for those who are getting tired of the discarnate state. Right? You understand that? Yeah, he does.
He's suffering from flu. He's been drinking too much medication.
Is that right?
Enough.
Or not enough? The way he looks so stunned when he looks at me, you know, it's just this guy, it's just seeing the fire coming out of my eyes, and he just loves it, right? He's just feeling good. Ah, Steve, you've been used to this. You've been on the show. Come on, contribute, Steve. Oh,
I would have prepared
the lines if I'd known. Yeah, you're putting people on the spot, and I think, I know I've listened at home when people have had friends down, and very few people can relate to this, Bob.
Why? What's the problem here? I mean, my church is failing.
Because the listener's missing that visual element. I have your four happy faces in front of me, and the listener doesn't.
Fine.
Five happy faces.
In ecstasy. Being around Bob, and I think, Mike, that's why you're the one who's constantly as a backup prop for me. You understand what's going on, and you just said the most eloquent thing we could have. Let's go to the subgenius tape, a little bit of staying, and remember where we were from and what has nothing to do with us now. Right?
I've checked into dozens of suspected mutilations. He says Bland doesn't know what he's talking about. That they will always see the naive, gullible individuals around that will jump on anything because they, you know, have we ever solved the Kennedy's assassination? Have we ever solved Lincoln's assassination? I mean, whatever anybody wants to jump onto and make something out of, you know, it's there and it's a free country.
People that have been investigating this phenomenon, they're considered kooks and cranks and whatever you want to call it. The fact of it is, they know what's going on. These kooks and cranks. And if you look at the history of mankind, it's always been the kooks and cranks that always got something done.
That's right.
The argument rages on. Are farm animals by the thousands being brutally killed and cut up or not? This man says no, it's all a myth. A crazy hoax dreamed up by somebody and built into a national fixation by a sensation-seeking press.
I think the thing is really perhaps manufactured by naive people.
Dr. James Stewart is a sociologist who teaches at the University of South Dakota. Intrigued by all the news stories about livestock mutilations in the Midwest, he did a study. His conclusion? There was no massive outbreak of mutilating animals. It never happened. But a rumor mushroomed into a case of collective delusion, actual mild mass hysteria.
People's imaginations run wild, and very often imaginations constitute what we would call delusionary beliefs, beliefs that are not true, but yet people believe that they are true. They explain the real world for those people.
Dr. Stewart says that often stress or some factor causes people to look at something ordinary and suddenly see it in a strange new light. Cows die all the time, Stewart says, but for some baffling reason, ranchers started looking at their dead animals and deciding they had been carved up. It never could have happened, Stewart says, without irresponsible news reporting.
All too often, I think that reporters actually, in many instances, fueled the fire of hysteria rather than to perhaps calm it by reporting scientific explanations.
One report has it that the whole mutilation scare was started as a joke on a radio show when someone said animals were being...